Good morning and welcome to the Public Safety Committee of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. My name is Supervisor John Avalos, the chair of the committee. Joined to my right by the vice chair of the committee, Supervisor Christina Olague. We're joined, not a committee member, but who is here with us today for an item is Supervisor David Campos, and we will be joined by the other committee member, Eric Marr, shortly. The clerk of the committee is, actually we have two clerks, Dina Braley, who's coming on, and our illustrious Gail Johnson, who is actually clerking her last committee ever on the Board of Supervisors after 36 years of service and exemplary service as that. I've been working with Gail now for almost 8 years, and she's been really wonderful to work with, a capable hand in the clerk's office, always schooling me on how to best flow my committees, and I'm going to miss you. So thank you for your work. Madam Clerk, do we have any announcements?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your kind words. Persons attending this meeting are requested to turn off all electronic devices. If you wish to submit copies of material for members of the committee, please submit a copy for the file. If you wish to submit speaker cards, please put them in the container at the rail in front of you to your left. And that concludes my announcements, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. If you can call the first item, please.
Item 1, a resolution authorizing the Department of Juvenile Probation to retroactively accept and expend a grant in the amount of $100,000 from the Federal Formula Grants Program for the Disproportionate Minority Contact Support Project administered by the Corrections Standards Authority for calendar year 2012 to be used to support the Juvenile Probation Department's efforts to reduce disproportionate minority contact in the juvenile justice system.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We have here the Chief Probation Officer, Chief Siverman. Welcome.
Here we go. The Probation Department is pleased to have this opportunity to share with the committee our work in conjunction not only with this grant, but the department's work that is extremely historical in the sense of addressing disproportionate minority contact in the juvenile justice system. It is a major element of our detention alternatives initiative that we have been embarking on for at least the last 10 years in San Francisco. This grant has allowed the Juvenile Probation Department to focus our efforts intentionally in the Bayview Police District. This is the second year of the grant. We focused on the Bayview District because of the numbers of African American youth who were entering the juvenile justice system here in San Francisco. And it was a targeted plan to not only increase the understanding of the patrol officers and all the officers at the Bayview station and that in the concepts of disproportionality within the system, racial and ethnic disparities that exist in the system, and to increase their awareness and to offer our assistance in the probation department that inure to the community policing strategy whereby instances that are identified by the police at the patrol level, even prior to any involvement of a law enforcement approach or response to any crime, that these circumstances that are notably contributory to delinquency can be addressed and mitigated earlier, and offering our assistance in following up on any kind of street adjustments that the police make or street contacts that could lead to pathways to some services within the community. So this is the second year where we've done working with the police department. A part of our grant also is examining a backlog of juvenile arrest warrants. And many times the youth have these warrants that are placed upon them for failure to appear, not necessarily intentionally absconding from the court, but simply just based on their failure to appear. So we have increased our court notification, and we're moving in a direction of an electronic notification similar to the calls that we get from our dentist and oil change places, reminding us of important appointments. And there's nothing more important in a family right now around a matter that involves their appearance before the court. So that's another area that we're looking at. We're also examining every one of our major decision points within the juvenile probation department. At the front door, when kids are booked into detention, we have a risk assessment instrument that we use to help guide those decisions. And we have employed the services of a nationally recognized expert in racial and ethnic disparity, the Haywood Burns Institute, founded by James Bell, formerly with the Youth Law Center, that is partnering with us to examine that risk assessment instrument, make some changes. Right now we're in the process of doing a dry run where we're examining some changes that we've made in the instrument to see if these changes can reduce the numbers of youth of color that enter our system. So this is the second year of that grant. It merely helps our department. Our department's efforts will continue well beyond the expiration of this grant, and certainly, as I've indicated, it preceded our acquisition of this grant.
Okay, Chief, thank you for your presentation. Just a question. This is not, doesn't include any staffing positions or no aspect of the
ASO here. No, it does not.
Great. Thank you very much. Any, Supervisor Maher?
Thank you, Chief Sifferman. I did have a question. So this is out of the Federal Formula Grants Program. Is it a multi-year grant? You said it's the second year. How long will the grant
this
last?
This will be the final year of that grant.
And then it did look like from the scope of work and the information that there is like $73,000 for a salary, but what does that, for the salaries and benefits, what does that person do?
Well, that person was, that we did have in that position, Tanya Redd, who found her way to the Adult Probation Department to advance her career. So we are utilizing our existing staff within our department. Gary Berenger is our coordinator of the whole Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative.
And then you mentioned James Bell, who has a tremendous track record in San Francisco.
Yes.
But is that like the professional services
that's
consulting
one of
the with the Haywood service. Burns Institute? Okay.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Loggett.
Yeah, I'm just happy to support anything that would, you know, ease this issue of the disproportionate number of men of color, Latino, African American, that are in the juvenile justice system. So at some point, I would like to hear some feedback on the effectiveness of how this money is being used and applied and that sort of thing.
Well,
so if we could get a report back in a few months. That
can
would
I just add one
yeah.
other point? I mentioned earlier that this began under the leadership and the partnership established with the Bayview Station when then Captain Sir was there. Now his efforts extend beyond just the Bayview and the interest in the entire city in this particular issue. The good news is that a reduction of numbers of youth entering into the system is clearly pronounced, particularly in the last year. And while the percentages are slightly the same in terms of the percentages of the youth in custody representing youth of color, the reduced numbers, particularly from the Bayview district, are extremely encouraging.
Great, and then I'd be interested in seeing the recidivism rates.
Yes.
You know, and see that
there's a reduction in the recidivism rate as well. Yes.
Okay.
Actually, I just had one other question. I also strongly support this, but appreciate the approach that looks at racial and ethnic disparities. Whenever there's policies that come through juvenile probation, are you analyzing them with their impacts on especially African-American, Latino, and Asian youth versus kind of the general population?
That's a great point to illustrate. We view the issue of DMC and racial and ethnic disparity as a lens that we put on as we examine every one of our policies.
Very good. We can go on to public comment. Any member of the public who would like to comment on this item? And seeing no member of the public come forward, we'll close public comment. Can we move this item forward? We have a motion to move forward with a recommendation. Madam Clerk, next item, please. Thank you, Chief.
Item 2, ordinance amending the San Francisco Police Code by adding Section 65 to prohibit obstructing sidewalks adjacent to white-colored curb zones and establish exceptions to the prohibition and adopting environmental findings.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. This item is sponsored by Supervisor Campos, who is here. Supervisor Campos.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank you for your co-sponsorship of this item. Let me just provide a little bit of background about this item, and I know that we have a number of members of the public who are here to speak on this item, and I want to thank them for being here as well. Various entities, including, for example, restaurants, hotels, apartment buildings, schools, religious institutions, healthcare facilities, as well as adult and child care facilities, have a significant number of customers who are picked up or dropped off by motor vehicles. And many of these entities, to facilitate that, ask the city through the Municipal Transportation Agency to establish a white zone, which a white zone is essentially a passenger loading area that at the street curb fronting the facility. And in fact, when you ask for a white zone, as part of the application process, you are required to pay a fee, you're required to attend a public hearing, and the matter, the request for the creation of a white zone ultimately has to be approved by the city's traffic engineer. We have seen, as we have studied this issue, that there are many benefits to having white zones. One of the obvious benefits is that white zones reduce the number of vehicles that are double parked on city streets, and I think that anyone who has used our streets knows that this is a recurring problem throughout San Francisco. Another benefit of having a white zone is that it obviates the need for drivers to circle around for blocks in search of a parking space, which is not only bad in terms of traffic, but it's also bad for the environment. So you can see that there are many benefits to having white zones when it comes to traffic congestion, improving the safety of not only other vehicles, but also pedestrians, and also reducing vehicle emissions. So what we have found, though, is that even though there is this process for the creation of a white zone, there is nothing that actually makes it an offense or makes it illegal to obstruct access to a white zone, which I certainly found to be surprising. You can imagine that if you're going to have a white zone, it wouldn't make sense for people to be able to actually obstruct it, which is the way the law currently works. And what we are proposing is to simply, in a very commonsensical way, add a new section to the police code that would make it an offense, that would make it illegal to obstruct access to a white zone curb, or the adjacent sidewalk between the curb and fronting the building. And by obstructing, we mean the placement of any objects, materials, substances, or personal property on the sidewalk. You know, this is something, anytime you're talking about public space, you want to make sure that you're crafting it in a very narrowly tailored way. And I want to especially thank Hillary Ronan of my office, who has been working with community members and the city attorney's office to make sure that this is done in the most narrowly tailored way that we can possibly do it. The prohibition that we're talking about would apply during the hours that the white zone is restricted to passengers loading and unloading. And you know, it really strikes the right balance in making sure that our open and public spaces in San Francisco remain open and public. But again, it is specifically targeted to deal with the issue that the benefits of a white zone would be undermined if there is no prohibition on people obstructing them. And so it's a very commonsensical piece of legislation. Under the legislation, a violation of this amendment would constitute an infraction. There would be a fine not to exceed $100 for the first violation, $200 for the second violation if that violation occurs within a year, and up to $500 for a third or any subsequent violation within a year of the first violation. We hope and certainly would expect that, you know, that we would have no violations. And, you know, if an individual is continually violating, we certainly don't want to see that because of the implications to so many of our communities in terms of access to these facilities. So, you know, even though it took a long time to craft this in the right way to take into concern all of the conflicting interests, we believe that this is a very commonsensical piece of legislation and would ask my colleagues today for your support. Before I turn it over, because we have a number of people who are here to present, I wanted to highlight that I have circulated a very small amendment to the legislation that I would respectfully ask the committee to move and to pass. And the amendment basically reads as follows: any property or equipment placed on the white zone curve or adjacent sidewalk by the owner or tenant of the premises fronted by the adjacent sidewalk and white zone curve for the purpose of providing information about access or for facilitating access to the premises and which is not otherwise prohibited by state or local law. What this does is that it recognizes that there may be some instances, you know, where maybe a church or a business may have, you know, something that is placed within the area that is covered by the statute, and it allows that flexibility. So it's something that that we think, you know, makes sense and makes the implementation more practical. And we certainly are very mindful of the fact that when you do anything involving public space, that you have to consider all the different implications. So with that said, if I may, through the chair, I would like to ask John Kwong of the Department of Public Works if he can talk today briefly about sort of the state of affairs, if you will, in terms of how white zones work and the existing rules around them. So, Mr. Kwong, thank you very much for being here. And thank you again to the Department of Public Works for all their support and help in trying to have a commonsensical approach here.
Good morning, members of the Board of Supervisors. John Kwong from the Department of Public Works. Supervisor Campos is correct. Currently under the Public Works Code, there are a variety of regulations related to opening the sidewalk area where pedestrians normally travel, that we can require that area to be clear. However, in these kind of cases, when from the curbside, immediately around the curbside, in what we call typically the furnishing zone, which is where trees, mailboxes, and such a place, there are no specific regulations that would then forbid people from occupying that area. I believe this piece of legislation addresses it as specifically as it relates to passenger loading zone in order to keep it clear and allow people to disembark off the vehicles and access the sidewalk. In this case, we believe this to be a well thought out piece of legislation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kwong. Unless my colleagues have any questions for you, I don't have any questions. Again, want to thank you. And, you know, especially Mr. Nuru, who has been very helpful to us in getting us the relevant information. And if I may, I'd like to speak, I'd like to call on Carla Johnson, who's with the Mayor's Office of on Disability, and if I may add, a Bernal Heights District 9 resident. We are very proud of her, and And, you know, I think it's important for her to be here because this legislation and the issue of the accessibility to of white zones has a special significance for the disabled community. So I'm wondering if you could speak to that. And again, thank you for being here, Ms. Johnson. Thank you for your help.
Yes, thank you so much for inviting me here and giving me the opportunity to speak before the committee this morning. I am Carla Johnson, the interim director at the Mayor's Office on Disability, and I'm here to speak in support of this legislation that would prohibit placing obstructions on the sidewalk adjacent to a white zone. The reason why my office takes a position on this is that this is an issue that actually affects people with disabilities and seniors and families, because the access to an unobstructed public right-of-way is a civil rights matter that is covered under the Americans with Disabilities Act. The white zone itself serves as a safe zone to allow people to safely disembark from vehicles, and those are vehicles that could be either a personal vehicle, maybe with a friend or family that is dropping you off at your medical appointment, or it could be a taxi or a paratransit vehicle that is helping you, you know, offload in your wheelchair. And many people who have mobility disabilities may find it difficult to travel more than, you know, a short distance down a sidewalk, which is why it's so important to have a direct access to these critical facilities like medical offices or senior housing or places of worship and institution. I have a personal story to share. My mother is 83 years old, and she lives in an apartment building where there's a white zone in front of the building. And she can't walk even, you know, half a block. So when I come to pick her up, to take her out on her errands or to take her out to dinner and such, I use that white zone, you know, to get her safely in and out of the vehicle so we can be on our way. If we didn't have a white zone, it would be my temptation to break the law and to double park in front of the street because this is my mother. You know, I want to make sure that she's safe. But luckily, we do have a white zone, so that makes it easy for me to do that transaction. Now, what we've seen is that when there are sidewalk obstructions that prevent somebody from either getting onto that safe sidewalk or traveling, you know, down the sidewalk from point A to B, we find that people go out into the street to get around that obstruction. And there are all too many stories of pedestrians who have been struck and either seriously injured or killed by vehicles because they've left that safe zone and they've gone out into the vehicular way. And so for these reasons, I thank you very much for your common sense approach to put forth this legislation, and I'm very supportive of it and appreciative.
Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson, and I appreciate the personal story. I think that we all have those kinds of stories, and I think that if anything, people would be surprised that there is nothing prohibiting the obstruction, which doesn't really make a lot of sense. But thank you for being here.
It was surprising to me. Thank you.
And if I may, I'd like to call on Lori Cook of the Department of Public Health. One of the questions that comes up is the impact of not having anything prohibiting obstruction in terms of the access to health facilities. And of course, you know, one of the things that we want to promote is access to health care in San Francisco, and a prerequisite to that access is that people are actually able to enter a health facility. So thank you to the Department of Public Health for being here. So Ms. Cook.
Thank you, and good morning to the members of the Public Service Committee, Safety Committee. My name is Lori Cook, and I work for the San Francisco Department of Public Health in the Office of Policy and Planning. And we are here, I am here to represent the department to affirm our support of this language for Section 65, because we believe that it will actually increase patient access to San Francisco's healthcare facilities and needed preventive care. As you know, the mission of DPH is to protect and promote the health of all San Franciscans. And a key component of our charge is to make sure that all San Francisco residents have equal, safe, and respectful access to the health and wellness services they need to achieve optimal health outcomes and wellness. It's also our charge to do what we can to remove barriers to care, making access to appropriate preventive services the easy choice, so residents avoid unnecessary hospitalizations and also costly emergency department use. We believe that the proposed changes to the San Francisco Police Code have the power to increase healthcare access for all San Franciscans, and particularly our vulnerable residents, such as seniors, persons with disabilities, young children, as well as others. By advancing changes to Section 65, we believe that the San Francisco Board of Supervisors will afford residents the ability to more easily seek appropriate care when they need it, safe from harm. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. And colleagues, one thing that I forgot to add in my comments is the fact that right now an individual can place physical items or articles of personal property on a white zone curve or in a sidewalk adjacent to a white zone. And by being able to do that, that individual, through the placement of those objects or articles, can prevent or impede a passenger's ability to enter or exit a vehicle. It also prevents the ability of members of the public to actually pass across the sidewalk. It can be particularly dangerous for some communities, seniors, individuals with disability, including individuals with mobility, vision, or hearing impairment. So the fact that laws as they stand today do not prohibit the obstruction of a white zone between the curb and the adjacent building is problematic for that reason. So I just want to point that out. So with that, I would simply ask for your consideration and support of this measure, and I look forward to hearing from public comment on this item. And so I don't know, Mr. Chair, if we can proceed to public comment.
Let's go ahead and do that. And I want to thank you for bringing this item forward. Clearly, the access that we need to have in front of our establishments that serve everyone, and including people with disabilities, is essential to carry out and maintain. So I'm very happy to be co-sponsoring this ordinance. So let's open up for public comment. Any member of the public who'd like to comment, please come forward. I have a few cards as well. Manish Chumsey, Eilid Panningbatan, Brendan Klitsch, Bob Planthold.
Thank you, supervisors, for considering this resolution. My name is Manish Chumsey. I'm representing Walk San Francisco. I think it's important to note, as the speaker from the mayor's office said, that many times when there's an obstruction on the sidewalk, people do end up having to go out on the road, and there are documented instances where people have done that and been hit by a vehicle. The other obstruction that we get, in addition to personal property, are people's vehicles obstructing the sidewalk, which is illegal right now. But not always well enforced. So Walk San Francisco supports this ordinance. We think it's a common sense means of keeping the sidewalks as clear as they can be. Obviously, we don't see this ordinance as being a money-making operation. We would like to see it as just something that people just do out of common courtesy for their fellow residents. So thank you again.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hello, supervisors. My name is Eilid Panningbatan, and I'm the Director of Community Engagement at Bernal Heights Neighborhood Center. I'm here on behalf of all the seniors that we serve there. So we serve seniors in the Bernal Heights, Excelsior, Bayview, Visitation Valley, just to name a few. And we serve about 1,060 seniors. Just so you know, both our centers, so Excelsior Community Center and Bernal Heights Neighborhood Center, 144 of those seniors are frail, has mobility issues. They rely on paratransit and rely on their family members to drop them off so that they can have access to the services that we offer. So this legislation will positively benefit the community members that, in which we serve. This is a reasonable law, right? It's supposed to keep us safe. It's there for so many purposes, so it's only fair that we use it to our full advantages, and it's supposed to keep our seniors safe. Every single day we see them come in and out, and it's already hard for them to get out of their cars, to get out of the paratransit, and to go back home. So I think that again, this will be beneficial to us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you, members of the Public Safety Committee, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. My name is Brendan Klitsch. I'm an orientation and mobility specialist with Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco, and I'd like to offer our support for the proposed legislation. Many of our clients and many of our community members with vision impairment or blindness, to them, sidewalk obstructions are a tremendous difficulty, and to many of them, quite a hazard. We have clients loaded and unloaded from vehicles every day, many of them, dozens in front of our building. We do, in fact, have a white loading zone in front of our building, which is a tremendous help to us. However, that zone would be quite less of a help if the sidewalk were somehow obstructed. For clients with vision impairment, their ability to perceive an obstruction in front of them is tremendously decreased. And so there are ways for them to reduce the hazard of contacting an obstacle, tripping over an obstacle on the sidewalk. But none is better than the absence of that obstacle. So we at Lighthouse believe that this is, as Supervisor Campos said, a very commonsensical piece of legislation, and we would like to lend our support to it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
I'm Bob Planthold. I came specifically to support this legislation. I've been involved in pedestrian safety advocacy for 25 years, and it's not because of my limitations, but because of the problems I saw for my kids when I knew they'd be going to school crossing hazardous streets. So when I first heard of this, I thought, you mean it's not already evident, obvious, and enforceable? It's something that's, you know, I've been involved 25 years, and it never occurred to me it wasn't the case. So I'm grateful to Supervisor Campos and the staff for catching this oversight, because as much as you've heard emphasis on the disability aspect, which is critical, I'm also wanting to talk about the family aspect, because again, that's why I got involved in pedestrian safety work. When my boys were toddlers and preschoolers, trying to corral them was a task. But it's not just my experience. The family next to me has four kids ages 8 and under. So think of a scenario where they've got to go to church, a clinic, somewhere. Four kids, mom and dad, they need clear, easy space to get in and out, to get to the bathrooms, to get to the table. You know, you don't want kids wandering around stacked stuff. You don't want them separated from you. This is going to make it simpler, easier. And again, it may not be a question of enforcement as much as the very fact there's this education component. Let businesses know, let churches know, let clinics know. There probably won't be many needs to enforce this or to issue warnings, but it's helpful to have this available as a deterrent. And for those reasons, I'm going to say again that at California Walks, we support this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any other members of the public who'd like to comment? Well, please come forward. And anyone else who'd like to comment, please come to the center aisle. Thank you.
Great. Good morning. My name is Adrienne Verilli, and I'm the Director of Communications at Planned Parenthood Shasta Pacific. I'm speaking today on behalf of our healthcare organization and our staff and clients that live in our neighborhood, as well as a San Francisco resident. Our organization was founded in 1962, and currently we operate 30 health centers serving more than 100,000 women, men, and teens each year in 17 Northern California counties, including two right here in San Francisco. We provide life-saving preventive health care services such as breast and cervical cancer screening, birth control, STD testing and treatment, HIV testing, prenatal care, and other essential services. We also provide sex information education for parents, teens, and other adults. More than 90% of our clients, particularly here in San Francisco, live 200% below the poverty line. The vast majority are women ages 20 to 34. In January of 2011, Planned Parenthood Shasta Pacific opened a brand new health center at 1650 Valencia Street. We now operate more than 40 hours a week and see in excess of 50 people a day, and we're so busy we're considering opening up on Saturdays in a couple of months. But after we were open a few months, we realized that there was a lot of difficulty for our clients to find parking, be able to be dropped off easily, so we applied and were granted a white zone. by the MTA in January of this year. While it has been operating very well, what we have noticed is that other objects, signs, and people have made it very difficult for our clients to get in and out of their cars. So we are here in support of the ordinance. It will be a tremendous help to our clients for their ability to be picked up and dropped off without obstruction, and also prevent potential injury for, you know, objects blocking their path. Planned Parenthood strongly supports this ordinance and thanks the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, particularly Supervisor Campos and Hillary Ronan, for their leadership on this issue. And we look forward to the upcoming results. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And seeing no other member of the public come forward, we will close public comment. Supervisor Marr.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank the neighborhood community organizations and Supervisor Campos and Avalos for bringing this forward. I'd like to be added as a co-sponsor.
Very good. Colleagues, can we accept the amendment from Supervisor Campos? Okay, we will accept the amendment. And on this underlying item, we can move forward with recommendation. Very good. So done.
Mr. Chair. If I may just, again, thank all the members of the public for being here. And I just wanted to add something about Ms. Johnson. I think it's appropriate. I'm excited that our pedestrian safety legislation is the last item that she will be sitting in as a member, as a clerk. I don't know what the city's going to do without her, but we wish her the best of luck. And it's been an honor for me to serve with someone who is truly an institution. So thank you.
I just also wanted to wish you the best and thank you for all of your help. I was recently appointed in January, and you've just been very gracious and very nice. And I just wanted to thank you for that. So best to you, and I hope you enjoy your free time now. But, you know, as I say, you know, I'm sure you'll probably be busier than you have been in the past 30-some years. So thank you so much for everything.
And I was just going to thank you for over three decades, way more than three decades of serving San Francisco, and it's been a pleasure working with you as well. Thank you.
Great. Yes, Gail, it's been really an honor to work with you, and I recall a few times where actually I'm going home at 9:30, maybe 10 o'clock at night, and you're coming either not necessarily from City Hall, but from something you're doing outside the city, out in the city, going to a museum or going out, and I know you enjoy your time, your free time. I know you enjoy traveling, and I wish you many, many years to enjoy all the things you love to do, and I hope you can come back and visit us as well. Thank you for your service.
Oh, I'd like to thank you, all you members of the committee. I've enjoyed working with you over the years, and I, again, as I said at the full board meeting, appreciate all the, you know, kindness you've shown to me. And, you know, I am retiring, and, you know, of course, I have mixed feelings about it, but I really enjoyed serving the citizens of the city all these years and working with you. And, again, thank you so much for your well wishes.
Okay. You're very welcome. Madam Clerk, is that that's it? We are no other items before us?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we are adjourned. Many long years of health and happiness in your retirement.
Thank you very much.